Welcome to Halley Healthcast, the wellness podcast from Halley Health, your partner in helping you live your healthiest life. Every episode on our podcast addresses a new topic important to your health and well-being, bringing in expert doctors, therapists, and specialists who offer advice and answer your most pressing questions. Today's episode is all about brain injury. March is Brain Injury Awareness Month, so it's the perfect time to learn more about this important topic. Here with us today is Aaron Alford. He's the lead athletic trainer and director of performance enhancement programming at Carl Sports Medicine in Champaign, Illinois. Welcome, Mr. Alford, and thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your knowledge. Well, let's begin, Aaron, with a fairly general question. When we say brain injury, most people think of a concussion, as it's the most common type of traumatic brain injury. And yet it also seems to be the least understood. So what exactly happens to the brain when someone gets a concussion? And can it actually cause permanent damage?
Yeah. So we know a concussion to be a brain injury caused by a blow or even a jolt to the head. So, you know, it could also be a whiplash event. But it can be from another body part where force is transmitted to the head. Although most concussions can be mild, some concussions are potentially serious and may result in complications leading to brain injury or even death. It's not often that that happens, but it's imperative that we have healthcare professionals around to easily diagnose these conditions. Because it could be either, you know, just a small ding to the head or a bump in the head, and that can turn out to be very serious. You can't physically see a concussion, and most occur without even loss of consciousness. And even signs and symptoms may show up right after the injury or take hours to even days after that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Alford. Great explanation. You know, it seems talk about concussions has become sort of all the rage in sports medicine and news media these days, thanks to the unfortunate frequency of their occurrence in contact sports such as football and boxing, and in other activities like gymnastics and cheerleading. Do you think concussions are finally being treated with the seriousness they deserve, particularly at the high school and college level? And what more do you think needs to be done in the prevention and treatment of athletic brain injuries?
Yeah, so even in most recent events, we can recall how an NFL athlete took a blow to the head in the first half of a game. They got out with some obvious disorientation. They kind of stumbled a little bit, but they were able to return to the game in the second half, being cleared by the medical staff. The subsequent game, he took another hit to the head, and this time it looked a lot more serious, whereas you can see some very scary posturing, which are signs of severe brain injury, and he needs to be taken off the field by the athletic trainers and the other emergency medical team by stretcher. So, and then after that, he ended up going to the hospital. So when that was in the media, you know, it's very scary to see how an athlete take such a shot one game, return to the game, take another hit, and then have to go to the hospital immediately after. This did cause the NFL and NFLPA to work on improving their current return-to-play guidelines, which is going to have a trickle-down effect at some point in time to how we work with our high school athletes as well. As mentioned, you know, we can't always tell when someone's concussed. You know, when we see that on TV, instantly we think something that could be, we automatically think that it could be a concussion, but if they're cleared by the medical staff, we have to kind of believe that. But yeah, we can't just give a universal diagnosis by just looking at someone and saying they have a concussion. We're trying to continue to prove how we handle these situations, the risk of post-concussion syndrome, or even worse.
Well, some excellent food for thought there. Thank you, Mr. Alford. As the lead athletic trainer at Carl Sports Medicine, what role do you see athletic trainers playing in the diagnosis and treatment of concussions among athletes?
Yeah, so athletic trainers can be that first line of communication. We're getting more accessible, so we're covering games, competitions, now we even are covering practices at some schools as well. So we're able to see the athletes throughout the course of, you know, sometimes an entire season. So we get to know those athletes very well. So if we do suddenly see that they're not acting their normal self, we're able to go through, and with a lot of our teams, we do baseline concussion testing. So we get a good idea of where their starting point is before any contact happens that entire season. So if should injury arrive, we're able to look back at that data and see from that baseline test where they make up, where they mark from day one of no contact to day 27 after an injury, and see where they stack up. with that, too, we're also a phone call away to our sports medicine physicians. So if we do have any questions where we're not really sure, we're either a phone call away or even in our unique setting, we're able to go right to their office and ask them, hey, doc, we have this athlete that all of a sudden starts showing signs of, you know, disorientation at practice. It was a hot day, so we didn't know if it was dehydration. What should we do to err on the side of caution? So those are our sports med docs have been around for a very long time, so they can give us advice on how to deal with these situations, even if we don't feel at that time that we know adequately enough what the athlete's going through.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Well, thank you, Mr. Alford. That certainly makes sense. You know, one of the considerations following a concussion that gets talked about a lot, especially in sports circles, is the amount of recovery time needed before someone who's had a big concussion should return to normal activity. Like we were mentioning earlier, I think with Tua from the Dolphins, right? And yet it also seems to be one of the injury's biggest ambiguities. So how long does it take to recover fully from a concussion? And aren't there guidelines to follow for athletes on returning to play? I mean, how do those guidelines apply to the rest of us?
Yeah, so there is no hard set timeline, unfortunately, with dealing with a concussion. Just like we know, you know, I'm different from you, so my recovery may be longer than yours, depending on that. And also, depending on the severity, if there is any other spinal cord injuries, that will also play a role in terms of that recovery. Here at Carle Orthopedic and Sports Medicine, we have a protocol in place to help minimize the risk of an athlete returning too soon. We start with baseline testing again for a lot of our contact athletes. So the biggest ones being, we know that football has it, and then one that we don't often think about, but also cheer. We scat test some of our cheerleading athletes as well, just because the prevalence can be high, like you mentioned with gymnastics as well. So if an injury does occur, we're able to track from day one what they may have that day, or also if there's any pre-existing conditions too. So if someone seems a little disoriented, but they might have another medical diagnosis that causes that, or if they take medications that sometimes that might cause that facey effect, we're able to see that, hey, this might be normal for them. This isn't necessarily a concussion, but other symptoms. Now, in terms of guidelines, after an injury is sustained, the way we start is we go through the SCAT test. The SCAT test is something that was created by FIFA. So with that, we start with our SCAT test 24 hours after they're symptom-free. So if an athlete comes in, has an injury, so say a football athlete comes in, has a sustained concussion on Friday night, they come in on Monday or Tuesday and say that they're now symptom-free, we take them through that testing. It's based on memory, coordination, delayed recall, and just kind of encapsulates different things. So again, with concussions, we can't look at it and see in their eyes. So we can see that their eyes may not be tracking correctly, whereas once an athlete no longer is experiencing symptoms, then we'll take them through our SCAT test. This is performed by either athletic trainer or physician. If the athlete passes this and they don't show any signs of limited coordination or tracking of the eyes, balance problems, then we'll start them with some cardiovascular activity, usually biking, stationary bike, for at least 20 minutes, just to get that heart rate up and see how that affects their injury. After that, if they have no symptoms the next day, we'll start with a little bit more higher intensity. So this could be jogging, running, elliptical. When I was working for a local high school, I would take them through a very baseline, basic level of CrossFit exercise where they're doing bodyweight exercise for about 20 minutes. So just get that heart rate up, see how they feel. And if they are feeling fine the next day, they'll move on to some non-contact sport-specific drills. They pass that following day, they're able to return to a non-contact practice before releasing to a full-on practice. So again, if at any point in time, if anyone experiences symptoms, so say we've gone through that first day, they test, they pass that baseline SCAT test or that post-injury SCAT test, we'll go back and start that cardio. Well, if they all of a sudden have a headache or kind of revert back to some of the symptoms that they didn't have with activity, then we'll start all over and wait until they're asymptomatic again, and then we'll redo testing.
Well, thank you, Mr. Alford. That is very enlightening. You know, it seems that one of the greatest difficulties in diagnosing and treating concussions is that no two are exactly the same. Is that true? And if so, why is that?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. No concussion is the same. And that's just because our brain chemistry is different. the amount of force is different. So depending on what the injury was, whether it be a car accident or going back to that cheerleading, if someone's dropped and lands on their head, those two forces are different. So that can have a different effect. And then based on prior medical history, if someone's had a concussion previously, then they're at higher risk that next concussion could take a little bit longer to recover from.
Gotcha. Well, what about the long-term effects of concussions now? Hasn't there been research linking repeated concussions to the onset of Alzheimer's disease and other neurological conditions?
Yeah, the biggest one that's been in the news has been, you know, linked to Alzheimer's, but even the CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Mm-hmm. And that's when a protein called tau starts building up within the brain. That can lead to lost memory. That can lead to the person not acting quite themselves. You know, if we go back to a few NFL athletes who have unfortunately passed away, they've donated their brains to science, and we look and see over the course of, you know, maybe short timelines or even long timelines, how this behavioral changed. There's unfortunately been some that have committed suicide when they had no prior history of, you know, depression or anything like that.
Of course. And one last question for you. If you could convey one essential message for Brain Injury Awareness Month, what would it be? What would you want us to be most aware of?
Yeah, I know it's, yeah, so for March, it's Brain Awareness Month, but it's also Athletic Training Month. So we're going to give a selfish plug that if you have a high school athletic trainer and you have any questions, feel free to stop them. These are very serious, even though the media may sometimes over-portray certain situations. We do want to take these very seriously. We want to make sure that these are being diagnosed and not just being seen as, oh, they got their bell rung and then return the sport, because the lasting effects, I mean, unfortunately, could be fatal.
Well, wonderful answers and information, Mr. Alford. You've simply been a pleasure to have on our podcast. Thank you so much for joining us and for all that you do every day at Carle Sports Medicine for so many people and families. That concludes today's Halley HealthCast. Tune in next time as we tackle yet another topic important for your health and well-being. And remember, Halley Health is your partner in helping you live your healthiest life. Visit Halley.com, that's Halley.com, for resources, information, tips, and much more. Let us help keep you and your family healthy and well. Thanks for listening. We hope you tune in again.